Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry, and I'm your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they've written or in the process of writing, or that they intend to write someday. Our regular host, Tim Morrison, is traveling today, so I get to fill in, and I'm just so excited about that. Stone Payton is here with me. He's the co-host of Right Here, Right Now. As Dr. Tim always says, Stone is a vital cog with both our show and with Business Radio X. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, sunshine. It's been a while since we've worked together.
I know.
I'm looking forward to this.
Since I saw you last, you've been in London and are in the process of setting up radio stations over there.
I know. I had to study up on the language, and then I went over. And I got to see some neat real estate and meet some terrific people. And bottom line is, we're going to put a studio up in London, Manchester, and we are seriously entertaining the idea of putting one up in Birmingham as well.
That's exciting. That'll be fun. So I can't wait to hear some of those broadcasts. I'm sure it'll be some interesting guests over there on those shows as well. We have some amazing guests today, and we're going to be discussing the power of writing to stimulate healing and to help others. We've got Kim Green. She's going to will share how her own experience with the autoimmune disease of lupus influenced the storyline in her new novel. Dan Gennari will tell us how the idea for a cancer treatment organizer was born from his journey through treatment of Hodgkin's lymphoma. And then we have Echo Garrett, who will share her co-author's story of overcoming abuse, homelessness, and abandonment, and how it's developed into a motivational book and a nonprofit organization focused on at-risk youth. So we're going to start with Kim Green. Welcome, Kim. We're glad to have you here today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm just going to do a little introduction. Kim is a prolific writer. Her writing career has included biography, short fiction, poetry, essays, journalism, commercial writing, and advertising copy. She was the ghostwriter for the best-selling book Life is Not a Fairy Tale, the autobiography of 2004 American Idol winner Fantasia Barrino, which became a Lifetime television movie. Kim's work was featured in the anthology Who's Your Mama? She was also a featured author in the African-American serial novel When Butterflies Kiss and a contributor to Proverbs for the People. She worked with legendary members of The Last Poets to collaborate on a mission, Selected Poems and History of the Last Poets. She wrote for the music industry for nearly 20 years, and her work has appeared in many publications. The book that we're talking about today is her debut novel, Hallucination. Yes. I can't wait to hear about it. So, Kim, for our listeners who don't know, I know that you, as I mentioned earlier, you've kind of used your own experience of having the autoimmune disease of lupus in and woven it into the storyline of your main character, Morgan, that's in the novel. Mm-hmm. Can you just describe to us a little bit about what lupus is?
It's an autoimmune disease, as you said, and it is basically the body attacks itself, which I find to be, as a writer, a wonderful metaphor. It worked out beautifully. And I think this idea of attacking oneself has so much to do with one's emotional state. And so the manifestation of a disease like that really connects with your mental state and where you are in your life. And so that's sort of Morgan's journey of looking at her life and her life, which seemed somewhat perfect, and then just being able to dissect it and see that it wasn't what it was supposed to be. And then her body fails her because, you know, she feels that that is the message, that your life was not supposed to be that way, and now I'm going to take it to another place. So I think that that's a huge journey that happens in the book.
Well, and I got an email across my inbox just this morning, mm-hmm. that had the statistic that there's 55,000 Georgians with lupus. I was shocked that that number is so big.
Yes, it's a huge disease that is, people don't know about it. And I think one of the interesting reasons is that people with lupus don't always look very ill. And one of the big lines in the book is because so much of it happens on the inside. And so I think that you see people, one of the sort of funny stories I heard about when I first was diagnosed was people had handicapped stickers in their car. And so then you would see them get out at the supermarket and walk easily across to the supermarket. So people say they don't need one of those handicapped labels. But basically, we have terrible arthritis. And so often, you know, and it's this body attacks itself, and it's chronic, and it's autoimmune, so it's very, very, very inconsistent. You never
know.
So
some days you might be feeling really good, and then some days you might barely be able to walk across the parking lot.
Some days you have a cane.
Wow. That's really amazing. Yeah. And I know that you wove your experience of living with lupus mm-hmm. into this storyline. Can you just describe a little bit about how your own journey influenced your character's journey?
I think the hardest part of it is the first, I think people who have lupus will tell you, when you get the first flare, which is the period that you don't really know that you have it, so then you're bedridden. I mean, you are so sick, you really think you're going to die any moment now. And then you start taking the meds, and the meds make you feel a little better. And then if you're working on your mental, you're working on your emotional state, and it all starts to improve. But I think the first part of Morgan's journey is a lot in the book about how you are totally isolated because people don't know what's happening to you. So they're looking at you, and you look fine, almost fine.
Well, and I know I used to hear that it took doctors a long time to diagnose.
Yes, it's a lupus. Highly, a very hard to diagnose illness, and people always think it's fibromyalgia. They just think it's rheumatoid arthritis alone. And so that rheumatoid arthritis, it will work for those symptoms, but it's not really the other things. So I think it's hardest because of the internal organs that get affected. So if you're having kidney problems or heart problems or some other big organ, even neurological. So some people who have lupus have seizures, and it's just really, it's quite a journey. But, you know, Morgan and myself, you know, we really have decided it's a journey. And so we've become friends with it. And I always say that Lupus is the main character in the book. So Morgan is the first character, but then Lupus is the secondary character.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned earlier that lupus is your body fighting against yourself. Mm-hmm. And then your statement of you've just decided to become friends with it
right.
is very powerful.
Yes, that's exactly true. I think that there's a line in the book where she says, Morgan says, well, when me and Lupus have run out of things to do at home and all we can hear is the echoes, then we are lonely. But basically, when you're just with Lupus in yourself, you are very busy worrying about all the different things because it attacks so many parts. So there's I hate to say this, but there's sort of the benign lupus where it's just a lot of exhaustion, you can't move, you know, you don't have appetite, things like that. And even, you know, hair falls out. I mean, things like that are sort of easy. But then it's the other things like the arthritis and the things and the pain and the itching and the skin, because there's discoid lupus, which is skin. And then there's the lupus erythematosus, which is the organs. And then there's a pill-induced lupus that can go away if you stop taking the pill. So it's all different journeys.
So it sounds like this novel would be an interesting story for anyone that has been diagnosed with lupus themselves,
yes.
or for family members
oh,
that
absolutely.
Are living with somebody with lupus. It might give them a different perspective of someone else dealing with this particular disease.
Exactly, and what's going on the inside. I mean, I hate to keep saying it, but I think that that has so much to do with it. And I think when people do have lupus, in fact, when I was first diagnosed, I spoke to a woman at the Lupus Foundation, and she said, oh, you know, lots of women with lupus are divorced. And I said, well, how could that be? But it is true, because I think when somebody is married, especially if somebody marries a really type A personality, a very dynamic human being, which is what I used to be, and then you see them like falling apart in front of you. Mm-hmm. And it's just a hard, like people don't really know how to handle it. And because you look okay still, you still look okay, but you have no energy. And yeah. So at the time when I was diagnosed, I had a newborn child.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't even lift him. And so in the book, there's one funny thing that's very based on my experience, which is the screaming game, which is my son, I couldn't lift him and I couldn't really play with him. So all I could do was scream. So it was for me to loosen up all that emotional stuff inside. But then he was an infant, so all he could do was scream back. So we had this thing called the screaming game. And so he's 9 years old now, by the way. And
we have that game at my house.
And he and I still scream. And so he'll say to me, "Mom, don't get mad at me for screaming. You taught me how to scream." And I've been working on writing the book. And I thought, oh, that's so ironic and so powerful and painful that that was all I could do. But that was our game. Screaming.
But what an emotional release to scream.
The screaming game.
So what's the best thing and the worst thing that you can do for a friend or family member that is suffering from lupus?
Well, it's ridiculous things like help them clean their house because they don't have the energy to lift a dish.
Yeah.
But I also think to just really be understanding and to listen, because it's just a real isolated period and you can't, and friends leave, by the way, like friends leave because you're no fun and you're also not able to do things. So you can, even if they say, you know, want to come over and just watch TV, I get to get there. Will be
and
too
just stay
much.
Awake.
Right, you. Exactly. Yeah. So it's just to really listen and to be supportive. And if you have a friend with lupus who has a child, take the child sometimes. Help. There's a character in my book who's a big help, and she's always helping because she, in the book, has a son who doesn't have any children of his own, so she's like desperate for grandchildren. So in the book, she finds Morgan, and she's like, "You need help. I'll take the child." I think my book talks a lot about all the relationships and people and their relationships, and I think that that character and her son, her grown son, she has a relationship with him because he has no children. So then she meets me, and then I need the help, so she takes my child. And, you know, it's a lot of interweaving of people. And I think that that's sort of an interesting piece of it.
Well, that is. And the relationships of us helping one another, I think, is so poignant in all areas of our lives.
Right.
You know, I know in the book that you talk about your character's love of music and how she kind of rediscovers that love of music that she had as a child through her mother and how that helped her with healing. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the music thing is interesting because in the book and in my own life, Morgan's mother dies. And so the music was a big thing when Morgan was a child with her mother. And I think that is... And for me, as Kim, I love music as well, and I was in the music industry for years. And so I think that when I was sick, I could not listen to music because it was just too taxing on me. I couldn't, like, concentrate on driving or do other things at once, take care of my son. I couldn't do it all at once with the music. And so I think as she heals in the book, she starts to get back into music. And I think that music is such a healing thing. And I think it's very important for anybody with any illness at all to focus on having a relationship with music. I think that that has been a very important thing for my life and for anybody. I mean, I just think music is such a healing thing. So I think that is in the book and talks a lot about Morgan and the music and then the silent months when there was no music.
And that's very powerful to see that contrast
yes.
of the silent months and then how she's able to incorporate that back into her life and her healing journey.
Right, exactly.
That's awesome. So we're going to go on to a couple of other guests, but can you tell us how our listeners can find more about you and buy your book and find your book and where that
would
be?
There's a website called hallucinationthenovel.com. And that website will be up in the next couple days. And I just was doing some finishing touches on it. But hallucinationthenovel.com is how you can find out about the book a lot more. And you can also probably hear this radio show on there. And you can purchase the book there as well. So that's the place to do it. And then I also have a writing business called Words LLC. So wordsllc.com is also how you can find out about me.
Well, Kim, thank you so much. And if you can hang out with us in the studio, we're going to talk to our other guests, and then we're going to open the mics in just a little
bit.
Sure,
of course.
Great.
Thank you
so much. It was fascinating to hear about your novel.
Thank you.
So our next guest is Dan Gennari. He and his wife own and operate VenueQuest, a professional meeting planning and hotel site selection company. At the end of 2008, he'd been operating his business for about 5 years and had recently relocated to Atlanta, and his son had just turned 2. Dan had experienced a variety of health problems throughout the year, but he attributed all of them to an intense work schedule, the stress of moving, and the challenges of parenting a headstrong toddler. In early 2009, Dan went to the doctor with a New Year's resolution goal of becoming healthier, and he was surprised to find that he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. 6 months into his chemotherapy treatment, Dan created a system to manage the mountain of mail, letters, insurance statements, notebooks, and scraps of paper that were piled up everywhere. On his website, he mentions that he kind of felt really out of control, you know, going from being an entrepreneur that was in control of everything and then feeling out of control of everything. So what he did is he organized a binder full of his entire cancer history. He knew how to retrieve any document. And now his Cureganizer is available for others to give them a feeling of control in their lives while they're going through a diagnosis of something like cancer. So welcome, Dan. Glad to have you with us today.
Good morning. I can go. You summed it up pretty well.
So I know that this was a really recent journey for you. How are you feeling now?
Right now, I am about 1 year past my stem cell transplant, and I feel pretty normal right now. I'm susceptible to lots of little infections and things like that, little colds, but for the most part, I feel like a pretty normal person.
Well, we're glad to have you. And I'm curious how the early version of the Cureganizer was helpful to you, and then how it's evolved as you've, you know, expanded it to be helpful to others as well.
So the early version, I guess, would just be the one I created for myself before it was ever
the version
a business
of one.
or something I was going to pursue as a writing or business endeavor. And it was just like you said, I had a lot of information around my house, and being a business owner and an entrepreneur and always kind of feeling in control of what I'm doing from day to day, this was a very new experience, and I felt completely out of control. I wasn't used to insurance companies calling and doctors calling, asking for payment on things and you know, lots of household chores to manage, and just everything was piling up. And like Kim just said, there's a lot of, I heard a lot of similarities in her description to what I went through. A lot of times, especially in the first year, I looked normal. You know, I didn't have the characteristic bald head of the cancer patients. My hair got thinner, but it didn't completely fall out. And you know, to look at me, you might not know that there was anything wrong, except I felt horrible, and I just couldn't bring myself to do anything. After creating the workbook, I suddenly felt like I was a partner in the whole process. I could walk into the doctor's office and know what happened the last time, where previous to that, I was just going by memory, and I may have been sleepy or medicated or anything at that last appointment, and I might not know where we left off, and just had no control.
And did you feel like that helped your doctors as well? It seems like that they see so many different patients, mm-hmm, that it would be hard for them to keep everything straight about your care as well.
I think I got a little bit of a reputation of being, I don't know if I'd call it a tough patient, but I asked a lot of questions, and
you kept track of what they told you.
Yes, and I would challenge them on things. If there was something I didn't understand or something I didn't agree with, I was willing to challenge their opinions because I had information. And, you know, I would say, well, you know, two appointments ago, you said we would do this, and now you're saying we're going to do something else. What changed? I missed that something changed along the way. And sometimes they would be able to explain it. Sometimes they wouldn't. One time, there was a radiologist who completely changed the plan because I told her, nope, about 3 months ago, you said there was going to be something else. And she went back, sat there for a few minutes reading through the chart, and then I kind of saw the eyebrows go up, and she said, "Oh yeah, yeah, we need to do this a different way."
Well, and I think that's a great.
She had forgotten something important.
Right. I think that's a great lesson for people to kind of take charge of their health care. My dad was really sick last year and earlier this year, and we would find that because he had some heart things and some kidney things, and his doctors would sometimes oppose each other. And so it was, it was tricky for my mom to keep track of what one doctor said and what the other doctor said and be able to say to each other, and they weren't always talking to each other. And so, it was important for her to be able to say to them, well, this doctor said to do this, and isn't that going to be a problem? And so I would think that would be helpful with the type of organizer you've put together as well, keeping all the doctors kind of informed of what the others are doing.
That's right. And beyond the doctors themselves, it's also the book is a good source to share with your caregivers, all of your immediate friends and family who are helping you out. The question comes up all the time, what can I do? I want to help. How can I help you? And again, if you're medicated or sleepy or not feeling well, you're not always ready with an answer. But the book, the very first section in the book is a task list where when the inspiration strikes you and you think, gosh, it would be great if someone did this for me, you can write it down and mark the priority. And then when someone says, what can I do?
It's you just easy. Go just, look in your
just,
book.
Just flip it open or That's hand it awesome. To them and say, go look at the list.
That's awesome. Well, and I know that you've got a personal journaling section of the Cureganizer. How was journaling helpful for you through your treatment?
Well, I did it all through a blog. I started I'd been threatening to start a blog for probably a few years before I got diagnosed, and never got around to actually doing it. I've always enjoyed writing. So it was something I wanted to do. And then when I got diagnosed, I said, okay, I need to do it, because just within the first few days, I realized how many phone calls I would be getting and how many friends and family would want to be knowing on a regular basis what's going on.
And that can be exhausting to say the same thing over and over and over again.
Exactly. That's what I did not want to do, is keep explaining it. So I started a blog, and it was originally intended to just post updates of my treatment. But over time, I started writing more about just life in general with cancer. A little bit like Kim, just kind of telling the story of what it's like and what days are like and how you view experiences differently through disease. And before I knew it, I was getting a lot more readers than my sibling and cousins and family members. I was starting to get comments from people I'd never heard of before, and people saying, I was searching Google for information about ICE chemotherapy because my brother is going to start it next month, and I found your blog, and it was lots of good information. And suddenly I said, oh my gosh, I'm reaching people here. Mm-hmm. And that was really powerful for me too. It made me feel better to know that even though I felt horrible, and it was usually kind of a struggle to write those words down, that eventually, at some point, they were reaching people and helping people.
So it helped you kind of describe to the people that loved you what was going on, but it also had a further reaching effect of helping other people that you didn't even know that are going through a similar type of process or similar disease.
Because people
or
entering
treatments.
The process usually don't have much experience with serious disease. And it's easy to get the clinical version of what's going to happen. You sit with your physician and they break it down in physician language of what you're going to expect. But everybody knows that doctors kind of have to speak in circles and leave some things out and be careful about how they say other things. I didn't have those restrictions. I just
'cause it was
said
your story.
What it was like from my perspective. And I think that was useful to other patients coming into the process.
Well, and I find it fascinating that you've taken this very challenging time in your life and turned it into not only an organizational system, but a book that helps other people. But in addition to that, you're donating a portion of the profits of all the sales. So can you tell us where those donations are going to go and what those are going to do?
Sure. And I'll be honest, that plan is kind of loose right now. It's definitely a solid commitment that a fixed percentage of the profits will be donated. Where it's donated, we're leaving a little bit up in the air right now. Initially, I'm thinking that we want to drive those monies into well-established cancer foundations. From a personal level, I got a lot of help from the Lance Armstrong Foundation and livestrong.org. So that's one that I would like to support. But I would also like to try and do more for direct patient support, because there's a lot of money that goes into research, but not nearly as much assistance directly for the patients and their families.
So Dan, how do our listeners get in touch with you, and how do they purchase a Keurganizer for themselves?
The easiest way is right through our website. It's keurganizer.com.
So why don't you spell that?
It's CUREGANIZER.
I kept trying to write it as Cure Organizer, and then I kept having to take the O out. So Keurganizer.
It's a combination of Cure and Organizer, and we just call it Keurganizer.
That's great. So Dan, thank you. And if you can hang out with us for just a little bit longer, we're going to talk to Echo, and then we'll have everybody chat. Thank you so much. Our final guest today is Echo Garrett. She's a journalist with 25 plus years of experience, and she's written or contributed to 10 books. And she's also been published in more than 75 national magazines, newspapers, and websites. Echo is the co-founder and president of the Orange Duffel Bag Foundation, which is a nonprofit that does life plan coaching with at-risk youth ages 12 to 24. And it's based on the book that she co-authored called My Orange Duffel Bag, A Journey to Radical Change. It's been the winner of 7 national and international awards in the categories of youth, adult, nonfiction, design, and self-help. The book, My Orange Duffel Bag, is a memoir of her co-author, Sam Bracken. He was abandoned at age 15, and Sam battled homelessness, poverty, and abuse, and moved through that to successfully earn a full-ride football scholarship to Georgia Tech. When he left for college, everything he owned fit in an orange duffel bag. In this illustrated memoir and roadmap to personal transformation, Sam shares his harrowing personal story, as well as everything he's learned about overcoming the odds and radically changing his life, so that you can create positive, lasting change in your own life. Sam is the general manager of Franklin Covey Media Publishing and is the spokesperson for the My Orange Duffel Bag Foundation. Welcome, Echo.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So glad to have you here. I remember meeting you a couple years ago at the Decatur Book Festival and seeing a copy of the book, and was just astounded at how beautiful it is. As a designer myself, it's just so beautifully designed, and it's got some cool pictures, and it's just a very interesting book, even just from a visual standpoint.
Thank you so much. When we started talking about the book, one of the things about Sam, he grew up in poverty in Las Vegas. He was surrounded by mobsters and motorcycle gang members, and he describes his family as being somewhat like a whacked out version of the Brady Bunch on an episode of Cops. And he was mistakenly in special education classes until he was 13, and a caring teacher figured out that he just needed glasses. And so as we were talking about putting together the book, we wanted to put together something that would appeal to people who have been through a lot of trauma and who might not, who would be intimidated by a big, thick memoir and would probably never, ever pick that up. We wanted it to appeal to young people who might have trouble with reading. And so it is heavily illustrated, as you mentioned. And it actually has more than 60 original images that my husband, who's an internationally awarded photographer, took and donated to the book as well.
Well, and so, I know that this is not your personal story, so I'm curious how you got involved in the project and what drew you to co-author this book with Sam.
A couple of years ago, about 8 years ago, I had worked on the autobiography of a gentleman named Clay Mateel, who owned the IMS company. And I was really inspired by him because he's used his wealth to help a great many people. And he is all about writing your mission statement. So I really thought about how I wanted to use the latter part of my life. And I wrote down that I wanted to tell stories that would inspire people to greatness. And so at the time I was editor-in-chief of Atlanta Woman magazine, and my husband was in a very serious car accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury. And at the time, we had been looking at adopting an older girl out of foster care, or we were considering adopting from China. And when it became obvious that from his brain injury, God had other plans, we literally prayed that God would take our desire to help orphans and magnify it somehow. And it was literally that same week that I met Sam, because at the time he was the VP of marketing for Mohawk Industries, and his company hired me to do their environmental brochure. So when I heard a little bit of Sam's story, I thought, if I could get this in a book, this could be transformational and help a tremendous number of people. So
when you all first started on the idea of the book, did you have the long-term idea of the nonprofit foundation at the same time?
Absolutely, yes, because he very strongly and rightly felt that very little attention is paid to older kids. In fact, in our country, we give up on teenagers. We have a really negative attitude about teenagers in general. And so the idea is that once a kid reaches 12 or 13 years old, a lot of resources disappear. And so we felt like if we could start an organization that would really highlight this issue and help bring it to the fore and help the business community be more aware of what was going on, that we could rally people and really make a difference. Because our book is all about hope and change and how together as a community we can help young people transform their lives.
So can you describe how because I know you all do coaching with at-risk youth through the foundation. Can you describe how that works and how kids can get involved in that?
Well, we're concentrating on the states of Georgia and Utah. We have relationships with DFACS in both of those states. And we do small classes. They're led by professionally certified executive coaches and life coaches. And we're an all-volunteer organization. And we're working with a group in different states. It's working different ways. But a lot of times the DFACS will help us identify youth who they feel like would really need our class. And so it's a 12-week course to go through the whole thing. And the kids they absolutely love it because they understand. They catch a vision for what transformational change can look like in their lives. And then after they've graduated, we maintain contact. We have what we call advocates who continue in that young person's life and maintain contact. And so we have, in the state of Georgia, for instance, we have only 14% of the kids aging out of foster care graduate from high school or get their GED. 14%.
Wow. That's tiny.
Right.
That's right.
And so they're set up for a cycle of homelessness, poverty, and abuse. And that's sadly what happens to a lot of the kids if they don't get extra support and assistance. So we're trying to bridge that gap and help more business people, more individuals be aware of the problem. And I can give you an example of one thing that just happened with the business community that I'm really excited about. Chateau Alon heard about what we do. And one of the problems, for instance, is that if a child is able to make it to college and they're in foster care, when the college shuts down for any kind of break, they don't have anywhere to go a lot of times. And so some of our kids, and that was a problem that Sam Bracken faced when he was at Georgia Tech. People just don't think about that.
Right.
But he had no place to eat, no place to sleep. And so 30 years later, we're still dealing with that same issue. And so Chateau Alon has agreed to host some of our kids over the Thanksgiving break.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I thought that was fantastic. And the kids are so excited and grateful.
And it's such a beautiful facility.
It's a beautiful facility.
So it doesn't feel like it's, you know, something that they're just having to put up with. It's a really beautiful place.
It's going to be a fantastic weekend.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and I know on your website that you've got a tab that has the title of change agent. Can you just describe a little bit of what a change agent is?
Well, we're trying to connect to other organizations that offer help to young people, because we know that we only offer one piece of the puzzle, and there's a lot of fantastic organizations out there that are addressing some of the needs of the young people who we serve. And we see ourselves as connectors. We want to be very much part of the communities. And our goal next year, our book has been picked up by Random House. We originally self-published it. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And next May, they're re-releasing the book under their banner. And that's National Foster Care Month. So we're really excited because we're going to have a national platform. And so we're in a bit of an unusual situation because we're such a young nonprofit, but we're going to be on a national stage next May.
So how can people come and find out more about the foundation and buy the book and find how they can help you? And what kind of help do you need?
Okay. We need more advocates. We need licensed therapists who have worked with young people who'd be willing to be in some of the classes in case we need any assistance. We need more life coaches, especially in other parts of the state. We're getting more and more people here in Metro Atlanta, but we really need more life coaches and executive coaches in the Atlanta area, as well as in other states. We're starting to gather that information because we're getting so many requests already from other states. Because I should mention, the way you get involved is you go to orangeduffelbagfoundation.org, and you can find a lot of information there. And we also need help with the business community. If more businesses would get involved and perhaps offer internships for our kids, we hear there's a very, very high unemployment rate among kids in foster care. And so we really need internships. We need ways to connect the kids to resources within their communities.
So it sounds like you're not looking as much for monetary donations as you're looking for businesses and individuals that can donate their services or their time or opportunities.
We need monetary donations.
You need money
too. Yeah, because what we do is very time and resource extensive. And so, yeah, we definitely need, because we give the kids orange duffel bags and we try to give them gift cards and other things that will help them along their journey.
So how can people buy the book?
Oh, it's available on Amazon. If you just look up My Orange Duffel Bag, it's sold off of Amazon.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Echo, thank you for being with us. And we're going to open up the mics for a few minutes. And Stone, did you have any questions for any of our guests today?
I have a ton of questions. We have to do a whole nother show.
I know. I know. It's fascinating.
But I'm just so inspired by everyone here. You guys have really taken on some pretty big stuff. The creativity and the energy that these guys are displaying, it's just incredible. So I love the design. I wish our listeners could see the way this book is designed. So right now, what is your primary method for getting awareness for what you guys are doing and getting money and time and services donated? How are you doing that now?
Some through our website, some through doing shows like this one.
Right.
I guess because I've been a journalist for so many years, we've been fortunate enough to get some media on CNN and some other outlets. And Random House is very supportive of our work with the foundation. They understand that this isn't just a book, that this is a life mission. And so So they're going to be helping us quite a bit as we build up to the relaunch of the book. So
it just has to be incredibly rewarding work. And I love your story about, I think my uncle is the one that has lupus. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's terribly advanced yet. Mm-hmm. And the reason that what you had to say struck me so much was, I think he's kind of in that zone where, well, he looks fine. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then he's probably like irritating people around him a little bit, like, you know, what's wrong? You know, just, you know, get out of your funk. You know, and I think that's kind of where he is right now. He's not terribly, terribly sick, but there's something that's not quite right. And so I was quite sincere in saying, you know, what can we do that wouldn't, what should we not do? Because there's probably some stuff that people that want to be helpful to do, and then they like really irritate them.
Well, I will tell you that it's interesting that your uncle does have lupus, because lupus is really a woman's issue, but there are men who have it. And then I was just reading in Lupus Now magazine, there was an article about a man who has lupus, and he says that there's such an isolating, further isolating thing, because it's sort of a woman's disease, even though men do have it. So, you know, your uncle needs to know that you are understanding and that you are treating him as if it was a woman who had lupus, because you know, it's, he's in an odd space, because there's not a lot of services or even support systems for men that have lupus.
Is there anything men or women can do to head it off? Like, if you knew at 20 what to do or not to do, is there any of that? Or
it's stress related. It's stress related. So I just think there's a lot of spiritual work that needs to be done for people as they're on their life path. So even if you're choosing mates, if you're choosing careers, you know, it's just about being true to yourself. I really believe that. And I believe that. And Morgan's story is a very good example of it, that you just, you know, you get taken up with what society says you should be doing. And you do, you put all your energy into it, and you love it, and you think you love it, and it's, it, your body just says, you don't really love this. And I'm going to put you in bed for 9 months so that you can think about it. So I just think that it's important to just be connected to people that have lupus, and to just understand where they came from, where they should be headed, or where you think that, you know, where, based on who they are in your life, you know, you really want to do that. You know, it doesn't seem like a fit, you know, and just to have people dig deep.
Well, I'm going to get him a lupinizer.
A lupinizer.
What do you think about that idea, Dan?
I should come up with that. We had, Morgan came up with a name for people with lupus. And so that's funny. Lupinizer.
Well, and I bet Dan's Kurganizer would be great with
absolutely
any kind of health issues.
Oh,
not,
absolutely.
Not only people that are going through cancer, but any kind of health challenges.
That's something we would like to do in the future, is bring it to other chronic disease, you know, customize it. It wouldn't work with this edition, but if we can customize it for you know, chronic heart conditions, diabetes, developmental disabilities.
Brain injuries.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So this particular edition is more targeted to people that are going through cancers that would require bone marrow and stem cell transplants.
Not necessarily. This book applies to any cancer.
To any cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it is more focused on the issues that are related to cancers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for coming and being part of the show today. We're just about out of time, so we're going to wrap up. But thanks so much, and I appreciate it. Our clock's on a stone. We're getting ready to wrap up. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. You can send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting with me today. It's so good to see you again. And I want to thank you to our guests, Kim Green, Dan Gennari, and Echo Garrett. Kim, could you share your contact information again so people can find your book and find out about you?
The book will be available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com as well. But my website is hallucinationthenovel.com or wordsllc.com.
Great. And Dan, can you share your contact information and how people can find the Kurganizer?
Sure. Again, the the best place is our website, cureorganizer.com. We are also working with Amazon to put it there, so it's a little easier to remember for most people.
That's great. And Echo, your contact information.
You can get the book off of myorangeduffelbag.com or Amazon, and for our organization, it's orangeduffelbagfoundation.org.
Great. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope that you will join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now and invite them to listen live on Tuesdays at 10, or they can go and listen to the archive downloads. This show is actually going to be up later this afternoon. You can listen to Right Here, Right Now every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at rightherewrightnow.businessradiox.com, or download the MP3 version of all the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I am guest host Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.